Hello, everyone. I'm Bill Roggio. I'm a senior fellow at Foundation for Defense of Democracies and editor of FDD's Lone War Journal. This is Generation Jihad, the podcast that covers all things in what used to be known as the global war on terror, but we now call the Long War. And today is Monday, so my co-host today is my friend and colleague, Joe Truesman. Joe is a senior research analyst at FDD's Lone War Journal, where he focuses primarily on Palestinian terror groups, Hezbollah, and just about everything going on in the region. Joe, happy Monday, and great to have you as my co-host today on Generation Jihad.
Hey, thanks, Bill. Appreciate you having me, and a lot to talk about today.
No, Joe, it's your show, too. Joe, it's been a really interesting weekend. The last 24 hours in Gaza, the Israel Defense Force withdrew a division and a brigade from Khan Yunis. That's a southern city near the border with Egypt, but just a little bit, a couple miles north of Rafah. The Israelis are claiming they're been withdrawn to rest and refit, and that things are going well in Khan Yunis. So right now, the Israelis have a brigade and elements of a brigade that are basically in north central Israel that is dividing Gaza in two, maintaining a dividing line in between the north and the south. So, Joe, I want to discuss what's the meaning of this? Why is this happening now? What are the Israelis saying the reasoning for? What do we think the reasoning for this is?
Yeah, so this is the hot topic, right? So why are they doing this now? And I'm still trying to grapple with this, with what's happening. So it's like you already said it, right? What the Israelis have said. I think they're also trying to, what they are saying is that they're maybe looking for a more tactical approach, right? Targeted raids, right? Kind of like what happened at Shifa Hospital that last a few weeks ago, where I believe is that they just let they knew what was happening at Shifa, and they just continued and monitored it and allowed just a bunch of terrorist activity there, and then chose a time to raid the hospital. Nevertheless, I think the explanation is that it's just they're going to do a more tactical approach instead of like a large ground operation like we've seen in Khan Yunis or Gaza City and other areas of the Gaza Strip. So, but the important part, but why now, right? Why, you've conquered Gaza City, or rather, I won't say conquered, but you've gone through Gaza City, you've gone through a significant city or a key hub of Islamic Jihad and Hamas in Khan Yunis. It's been 6 months already, by the way. Now it's officially 6 months. Been through this unbelievably, and they made good progress. It's really I'm very surprised how well they've done so far. But now, why are they seemingly scaling back? Right, it's tough. There's been a lot of political pressure. We've talked about it so much, Bill. Right, political pressure from the United States, from the international community, and there was this call between Bibi and Netanyahu a few days ago, and I think it was on last Thursday. And then you saw this change that happened right away after the call, right? For instance, the Israelis opened up a crossing in northern Gaza that had been shuttered since October 7th, right? It just opened up, right?
The crossing was destroyed by the Palestinians, wasn't it?
I think it was. I don't know. Crossings were destroyed or at least heavily damaged. I can't recall because there's two. There was one that's for foot traffic, I believe, and then there's one for goods. But anyway, and that, I could be wrong on that. Nevertheless, I think they were damaged, but this one was opened. Okay. So, right after the call, and then I'm talking about same day. So it's pretty obvious what happened there. And then now this, so, I one can say, at least we're trying to be analytical about this, right? Forget if you're pro-Palestinian, forget if you're pro-Israel. If you look at this, you're like saying, well, Israel's probably caving into pressure, U.S. pressure. So I think that's what may be happening here as well, unfortunately. And I don't think it's a good sign. I think it encourages Hezbollah, it encourages Hamas, encourages all the other members of the so-called, axis of resistance to continue doing what they're doing. Because, and we've talked about so much, Bill, when it comes to the United States and its support of allies and it's just itself, it can't play the long game, right? We know this. So, and I'm seeing that. So, yeah, so it's encouraging these groups and definitely encouraging Hamas. Why would they budge on a ceasefire or budge on demands for a ceasefire? So that's where I'm at right now. I think the Israelis will eventually go into Rafah. Is it going to be a ground operation, like a big one, like we've seen in Khan Yunis and other, you know, in other cities in Gaza? I don't know. I don't know. But it, I don't like the way this looks. I'll just say that.
Yeah, and I agree with you, Joe. And we shouldn't like if the way this looks. Look, if the goal is to defeat Hamas, the Israelis are extending, giving a lifeline to Hamas. We've talked about this numerous times, Joe, and Anthony, right. You would probably know this more than anyone. If those tunnels are still operational, if Hamas maintains a bulk of their fighting force, the Israelis estimate, what, around 13,000 Hamas fighters have been killed in, you know, that's, if that's true, and I don't have any reason to doubt it, that's significant. Hamas is estimated to have, what, anything between 18 to 20 something, 20, I've heard up to 25,000 fighters.
Yeah. The numbers vary.
Yeah, the numbers vary. But look, given the fact that they 3,000 Hamas fighters surged into Israel on October 7th, I think those 20,000 numbers up in the mid to high 20,000s is probably the real number here. There is no way Israel is going to defeat Hamas if it doesn't clear those tunnels, if it doesn't root out Hamas in Rafah and secure that border, which is also a lifeline to Hamas. And that's what I'm getting now. That's what I'm picking up. Yeah, there may be operations in Rafah, but if they're not full-scale operations to clear out Hamas and to destroy that infrastructure, this is an absolute mistake for the Israelis. You know, one of the threats from the Biden administration that we've seen over the last is that it hasn't been made overtly, but there's been talk of conditioning aid, and Secretary Blinken has said it, and other, Jake Sullivan, I believe, came out and said that, and other official spokesmen for the State Department have said it. Yeah, so you have that threat. But you know, what good are American weapons if America is handcuffing the Israelis and having them fight with two hands behind their back and telling them they can't go into Rafah to defeat Hamas? I the Israelis at some point, you know, in my estimation, should be calling the bluff of the Biden administration. This would become a very real domestic issue for the Biden administration. You know, despite what we see on the news, I think that a lot of the support for Hamas or here is skin deep. And anyway, that's a whole political issue. I don't want to go too far into that, but the Israelis are making a serious mistake here, caving. I can read this no other way. Joe, you laid it out perfectly, right? That phone call is made Thursday, and then boom, you have a border crossing open. You have the Israelis coming out and saying, oh yeah, we'll secure that pier that the U.S. is going to build. And then they withdraw division plus from Khan Yunis, again, look at a map, folks. It's like 2 miles north of Rafah. If your plan was to go in and clear Rafah, the last thing you want to do is reopen Khan Yunis up to Hamas so they could bleed over into there and get back down in the tunnels and in the rest of their network that may still be existing.
It is strange, and it does indicate that it's due to pressure that Israel is doing this, and doing this, I feel like it's just gonna make this war last longer, right?
That's exactly, Joe. You were reading. I said, saying to myself, it's going to extend this war.
It's going to extend it. Yeah, there you go. Exactly, and so it's just. I mean, look, I know that the Israeli government and Israeli defense officials understand what's happening, and they know what we're talking about is probably something they already know, they understand. But for, you know, the reasons we're already talking about, you know, they're having to caving to this pressure, it seems like. It's just extending this war. And the problem is, the longer you extend it, the less chance that Israel is going to be successful and Hamas is going to be defeated. Right. So, it doesn't make sense. And there's other problems too, not just Gaza. You have, you know, Hezbollah in Lebanon, and something else I want to mention too, a little just afterwards, is the West Bank. There's some problems coming that recent days and recent weeks in the West Bank that I've observed. That's really, that can really bite the Israelis in the rear and the Palestinians, actually. But we'll talk about that in a moment. But anyway, yeah, it's just extending everything. It's just extending this war. That's what you're doing. I understand you want to save lives, and you know, the United States wants to do this in a certain way. They want to, but I read it somewhere. They want to something about shaping the war or something like that. The way it's done. Nevertheless, I just think it's just a crapshoot.
Wait, right. Joe, the Israelis said that this was part of them shaping the war?
Yeah, I read somewhere that the United States was trying to shape the way this was done. And I can't recall the exact word, but I remember shaping the way, like, it's just really strange. And I saw it some days ago. So, I mean, this is just me talking off the top of my head, but I remember seeing that and it stuck out to me. So, nevertheless, yeah, it's just, but it's clear that they're trying to shape it. I mean, I don't need to.
They are shaping it. They have shaped it now significantly, right?
Yeah, it's clear. I mean, you don't have to read it somewhere else. I mean, if you observe this, you can see it already. So it doesn't matter where it came from. So, there's a lot of problems. And at the end of the day, Hamas and its allies are going to be very happy to see this. And it's definitely going to encourage them to keep going.
I mean, you know, if you're Hamas, you're going, wow, the Americans are doing my job for me.
Pretty much.
If you're the Iranians, you're going, wow, we could really pressure the United States to come down hard on its key ally. I mean, this is all of the wrong messages are being sent here. If you're, you know, so I've heard the argument, well, this gives time and space for the U.S. or for Israel and Hamas to negotiate hostage release. Hamas's position for the last, or since this began, was that, or actually since the first hostage exchange has been no more hostages released until there's a permanent ceasefire, which means an end to U.S. or I'm sorry, end to Israeli operations in Gaza. That's what Hamas wants. Do you think does anyone really believe that Hamas is going to moderate that position now that the U.S. has forced Israel to put a pause on its operations, to withdraw forces from Gaza? This isn't how diplomacy works. This isn't how carrots and sticks work. This is the exact opposite. This is how you get the opposite outcome than you intend. And then, you know, at some point you start asking the question, what does the Biden administration intend the outcome for Israeli to be? I don't know the answer to that anymore.
I can't believe you have to say that, but yeah, it's true. Yeah,
but here we are, right?
and you just told me something, and I just realized something that, and I'm glad you brought it up, that so Hamas's position, like you were saying, withdraw Israeli force for a ceasefire to happen, or at least a temporary one, and a hostage deal. Israel has to withdraw its forces and completely and declare an end to the war. Okay, Israel has said hell no, basically to those things. However, it seems to me now, I'm processing everything, is that maybe what happened here is that an agreement was made. Maybe Israel and Hamas, indirectly, of course, or through the mediators, they reached an agreement where Israel would pull out most of its forces, right? And Hamas would, you know, they just reached an agreement where Israel would pull out these forces, most of them, and Hamas would be essentially okay with that. Now, it's possible that's what happened, because now, look, the thing is...
Joe, are you saying that Hamas would exchange prisoners, some prisoners, well, for a partial withdrawal?
Yeah, I'm getting to that. Yeah. Because okay. Listen to this. There's a ceasefire. Ceasefire negotiations ongoing right now in Cairo. And you're reading the news. It's looking good. All right? Looking good. So all of this is just not a coincidence, okay? So I think they may have come to terms to some sort of agreement where they met each other halfway, right? Where Israel pulls out most of its forces in exchange for Hamas agreeing to a hostage release, right? Or you could call it a temporary ceasefire as well. I think that's what may be happening here, okay? We'll know in the next few days or the next week, but I think there might be actually a ceasefire coming in the next few days.
But would it be a permanent ceasefire or a temporary ceasefire?
No, I think it's going to be temporary. I don't think the Israelis are going to stop. I hope. At least for the Israeli sake, it's temporary. I don't think it's permanent. So that's where I think Hamas has understood that Israel's not going to stop, right? So I think that's what may be happening here. I'm just going off. So
certainly a possibility. I you know my position on this. While I sympathize and I understand the Israelis' desire to get all their hostages back, we're dealing with this is different than making an exchange for a couple, you know, a thousand Palestinians for prisoners for one soldier. Israel was attacked in a horrific manner that's a threat to, you know, the Israelis need to be thinking beyond that, be thinking about the defeat of Hamas. And just the fact that it's, even if indirectly, negotiating with Hamas, which it is, I don't care if there's Qataris and Americans that are in the middle of these negotiations and they may or may not be directly talking. At the end effect is they're negotiating with Hamas after Hamas did what it did on October 7th.
Yeah.
And that's a huge mistake as well. And I'm just going to bring up one more quick point. Mm-hmm. If the United States did engineer this, and this does work into a temporary ceasefire and a possible hostage exchange, why isn't Hamas releasing I've heard the numbers, either 5 or 6 Americans who are in custody, who are being held hostage by Hamas. What is the U.S. ever getting out of this deal? When has President Biden stood up and said, Hamas, return our American prisoners? He won't do that. And this all just smacks of weakness to me. Not shocking, given what we witnessed in Afghanistan. This administration is horrible at negotiations, at reading the enemies, at relying on what it thinks are partners like Qatar. And it did it in Afghanistan and it's doing it now with this conflict. This is all just mistaken, just bad diplomacy, bad policy all the way around from the Biden administration.
Yeah, it is. They're just playing back to politics, right? That's what I'm seeing. Everything started great at the beginning, the first few months, and then it just went downhill from there. So it's tough. I would like to hear more about the Americans. I don't from the Biden administration.
I'd like to hear anything about them.
That'd be nice.
I mean, you know, it's like we should be seeing on the news, you know, day 185, the exact number is. You know, 5 Americans held by Hamas, not a peep in the media. They don't even want to discuss American hostages. It's absolutely, they did the same thing. And again, in Afghanistan, I hate to bring that up, but there's still Americans that are trapped in Afghanistan. We're not hearing about it.
Yeah.
Makes you think twice about, you know, taking the trip overseas, because, you know, it used to be that your government had your back, and I don't get that feeling anymore. One quick point I want to bring up too. One of the things and I mentioned this earlier, the Israeli claim is, well, it's only withdrawing those forces to rest and refit that division, which has been fighting in Gaza. Sure. They have been fighting in Gaza for a long time, 5 months. If this was a planned operation, where are the Israeli troops that you're replacing them? Because this is what you do in these situations. You rotate a unit off the line. By the way, they wouldn't be pulled off on en masse. They'd be, taken out battalion by battalion until you achieve and be replaced, which is what should have been done. This is one of the tells to me that this was political pressure and not a planned withdrawal, because I don't think the Israelis are stupid enough to think that Khan Yunis is secured, or that the best way to go into Rafah is to reopen Khan Yunis to allow Hamas to bleed back in there. So I just wanted to bring that up.
No, it's a very good point. That's excellent. Excellent. So yeah, it's,
sometimes you got to read between the lines here, right? Like little things like that, you know, if they tell me that these things didn't happen quite the way people think or quite the way that governments think. Look, we understand the Israelis have to put a best face on this. I don't think anyone believes them. You have to really want to believe the Israelis to think that this is a good thing. But if you're looking at this objectively, it's not good military policy, and it's not good political policy as well. It's just bad policy all around.
Oh, no, absolutely. But I did mention this earlier, and I kind of just switching gears just a little
bit. Yeah, Joe, I do want to hear about the West Bank. Bringing that up back
it's,
up. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really interesting, actually. So, it's been about a month, I would say, about a month ago, Israelis stopped a suicide attack in Tel Aviv. Well, it was from, there was a Palestinian from the West Bank I was intending to carry out a suicide bombing in Tel Aviv, right? And they stopped him, actually killed him. It all happened in the West Bank. And then a few weeks later, something similar happened. So that's two within, you know, weeks of each other. And then, interestingly, last week on Friday, the Palestinian Authority in Jenin, they thwarted a Islamic State cell operating in the area that had prepared, at least from the reports I read, up to, I think it was three car bombs that we're going to target, not the Israelis, they're going to target the Palestinian Authority security forces. All right. So, and this was significant, by the way. These aren't just like, you know, tiny explosives. They had, you know, these vehicles packed with bombs. Like,
yeah, it wasn't an aspirational plot where
no.
This guy was reaching out to people to gather supplies and building his network. No, they picked up real.
Yeah, this was serious. Here. Yeah, it was very serious. And they were, and even had a mortar shell. I have no idea where they got that from. Anyway, and then yesterday, there was an attack, a Palestinian attack. It was in the West Bank. It wounded a soldier, all right? And he got away. And the Israeli security forces found his vehicle, and in that vehicle was a large bomb, right? So, and it was intended to be used as a car bomb, right? So, as an analyst, you know, you pick up this stuff, right? You see, you look for patterns, right? Because that's important. And I'm seeing this pattern of attempted suicide attacks, car bombs. This is serious, okay? So this isn't, you know. This isn't normal for the West Bank. I mean, here and there, it happens over the years where these people attempt to either establish organizations like Hamas and Islamic Jihad, try to pull something, some spectacular attack off, and they're thwarted by like the Shin Bet, for example. But this is all within a few weeks of each other. And already we know the West Bank has been in an uptick of violence since 2021, since summer 2021. So I just see things just getting progressively worse. And these recent thwarted attacks, these thwarted bombing attacks, super concerning. And I'm it's not really being talked about a lot, I think. And the Palestinians and the Israelis really dodged like major bullets here, right? Big events could have happened. So this would have turned the West Bank upside down if at least one of these attacks would have occurred. The Islamic State one against the Palestinian Authority, maybe not nearly as much, but still. These are significant events, right? I don't know. I can't say if these are being manufactured or being directed by terrorist organizations like Islamic Jihad and Hamas, just because I haven't seen anything on it. Nevertheless, it's important to know. And I just wanted to bring it up, right? Because the West Bank is just another front that Iran is trying to basically foment violence, right? They've said it already. And they've been pumping money into the West Bank as far as towards for terrorist organizations and arms. Including advanced weaponry. So it's the West Bank's turning, it's getting bad. It's getting worse. It's not getting better at all. So I just want to just bring that up to the listeners because one day things might pop off and it's again.
We've been waiting for it, right, Joe? Yeah, we've seen sniper attacks. Those seem to be increasing, right?
The West Bank? There's just a lot of shootings, lots of shooting attacks. Most of it's done by established organizations. Again, Al-Aqsa Marj Brigades, Islamic Jihad, Hamas, but there's so much focus is on Gaza, so much focus on Hezbollah and Lebanon. Again, not a lot of attention being paid to the West Bank, and I understand that. But again, I'm saying Israelis and the Palestinian Authority have dodged some serious attacks. Like they've gotten very, very lucky. I cannot emphasize that enough right now. So, and I just don't think one day one's going to get through. Okay. And I'm not just talking about a shooting attack. I'm talking about one of these guys with explosives in his vehicle. All right. So I'm afraid it's going to happen. So hopefully I'm wrong. Right. But just wanted to bring that up.
Yeah. And, you know, to your point about whether, you know, look, large car bombs tend to not be built by individuals. They tend to be
right. Yeah. It's a network. Yeah,
this is usually right. I mean, it's certainly possible. The thing about the West Bank that really, you know, at least the border with Lebanon, you can manage a border. The same thing with Gaza, a little more difficult with the southern border with Gaza, but you can somewhat contain the way the Israelis and Palestinians are intermixed in the West Bank. I mean, there's just enclaves. And once that, if that kicks off, if one of these large attacks come through, and if Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad and Al-Aqsa sense weakness because of an Israeli withdrawal from Gaza and decide to kick things up, this is the one that's really difficult for the Israelis to contain. I think this, the West Bank to me gets a lot of, it gets ignored, and it's understandable right now because that's not where the bulk of the violence is coming from. But boy, if that, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, Joe, but the, if that goes off, I this is one that's really difficult for the Israeli security forces to deal with.
Yeah, absolutely. And they've just been just containing things over the last more than like 2.5 years or so. So containing the West Bank, and they've had some, you know, they've had a lot of success in doing it, but it's not going away, right? It's not going away. So, and we've talked about it before. I think eventually Israel will have to, once it's done in Gaza, or maybe not, maybe do it sooner than that, I'll have to focus attention on the West Bank. Okay. I mean, at least the northern West Bank. So where most of these groups operate. So anyway, yeah. So just keep watching the West Bank. That's what I'm saying. It's super important. Bad things are happening there, and I don't see things changing. That's the bottom line.
And Joe, any new developments since the Israeli strike in Damascus that the senior IRGC general, his deputy, and I believe it was four or five other IRGC officers? Have we seen any response from the Iranians, or is this, are we going to see a revenge at a dish best served cold here?
Yeah, that's what everybody's been waiting on, right? What's going to happen? And we talked about it on Friday with Benham, talked about it extensively, but you know, nothing yet. So I mean, there's different reports that have been published that, you know, the Iranians may just be biding their time and may do it at a date of their choosing, which is, you know, the words that you often hear from governments and states and other state and state sponsors of terror. They'll wait, you know, when at a time of their choosing to respond. You know, so we haven't seen anything yet, right? And but that doesn't mean nothing's going to happen. I think, you know, I really don't think Iran's going to directly attack Israeli soil. I think that would be one of those what you would only see in a formal war, all right, between Iran and Israel, right? I could see that if Israel attacked Iran's nuclear sites, let's say, for example, that's when I'd imagine Iran would launch ballistic missiles at Israel. So I expect something more on the lines of, I don't know, in a third party country, right?
Proxies and yeah exactly, right?
Which they've been doing yeah. this for a long
which time. Is happening today. It's happening every day. That's the irony of all of this, is like we're waiting for an Iranian response, but the reality is it's been a continuum of attacks by Iran's proxies, by Hamas, by Palestinian Islamic Jihad, by Hezbollah, by the Houthis, by, well, the Iraqi and Syrian militias in different ways. But even then, they've launched it. I think they did launch a drone against Israel during this time period. I don't know if it made it through, but they've been still trying to do this. So, yeah, I mean, you know, but we are looking at like a direct response. There's been some talk of Iranians attacking, you know, Israeli embassies. I believe an Iranian official said that, you know, that's an actual distinct possibility.
Yeah.
And so, you know, again, they could be trying to rattle cages or they could be serious. I tend to take them at their word, or at least prepare for, and, you know, when they say something like that, I'll take them seriously because they've done it in the past, as we outlined last week, right?
The
continuum attack on diplomatic buildings, you know, embassies, consulates, and things of that nature, you know, since the founding of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Yeah, and I think at least part of their strategy has succeeded. And what I mean by that is that they caused a lot of fear in Israel, right? And a lot of headlines that, oh, Iran's going to respond. So you started seeing all sorts of, and we talked about it on Friday, we started seeing reports of people in Israel going to the grocery market, pulling out money out of the bank. So partially they did succeed, right? And again, you know, they don't have to necessarily respond militarily. They can, you know, they can do other things, right? On the diplomatic front, or even up their nuclear activity, which I'm definitely not an expert in. But there's all sorts of other things they can do, right? So then again, we can resume attacks on the United States, right? On American troops. So nevertheless, I think they will do something. Again, I just don't think it will be an attack on directly on against Israel on Israeli soil, but you never know. There have been times where Iran has financed bombing attacks or other attacks on Israeli soil, right? Against Israelis on Israeli soil. So that may be the case here. I think there was one case that happened about, it was before the war started. There was a bomb that went off in a park. And I don't know if it was in Tel Aviv. I can't recall exactly. But anyway, it was before the war started. I think it was during the summer of 23. And it was, there was reports that it was from Iran. All right. So, but I can't confirm it, but it's, so anyways, that's my point, right? So it could be something like that too. So nevertheless, we'll see, but nothing has happened as of today. Right. So, we'll see what happens.
And Joe, would the Israelis consider an attack on say a consulate or an embassy or just a prominent Israeli civilian overseas? Would that be considered this attack of the same magnitude as, say, an Iranian attack on directly on Israeli soil?
No, I don't think so. You know, the Israelis have thwarted, with the help of the Shin Bet, and with the help of the Shin Bet, of course, they've thwarted several attempts on Israeli businessmen working in Europe, for example, that have been the targets of the IRGC. All right, and the IRGC worked through, I believe, proxies on that as well. No surprise. So nevertheless, it's, and there was some incidents in Turkey as well a year or two ago. So, but I don't think, no, I don't think they would respond in the same manner as if the IRGC would, you know, or if the Iran would have attacked Israeli soil. I mean, and I think a lot of it depends on the target too, right? If there's a target, you know, like an Israeli embassy, of course, you know, that could be, it's Iranian, that's Israeli. That's a symbol of Israel, and I believe it would be considered Israeli soil, right? So it just depends, A, what happens, and B, what the target is. So it's tough to say, but there's a lot still up in there. A lot of options available to Iran, and nobody knows exactly what's going to happen, to be quite honest with you, what they're going to do. So it could happen any day now. It could happen 3 months from now. So we'll see.
All right, Joe, thanks. That was quite, I think we covered quite a bit of ground there today in a quick amount of time. Anything else before we finish up?
You know, again, just watch for news about a ceasefire happening, or for Hamas accepting a ceasefire, at least a temporary one in the next few days. All right. Just watch for that. I suspect that's, it's going to happen.
That's interesting. Yeah. I mean, I guess that could be, you know, seen as a glimpse of, you know, look, I'd love to get those hostages out. I think it's really been the problematic part of this operation for the Israelis. But I think that in the bigger picture, I really think it's set the Israelis back significantly. But Joe, thanks again for joining me today on Generation Jihad.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure. And we'll talk again soon.
Yes, we will catch up very soon. Thanks, everyone, for listening to today's episode of Generation Jihad. Just a reminder, you can listen to us on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. Please subscribe to Generation Jihad and leave us a review, preferably a positive one, but only if we earned it. Thanks again, and we'll see you all again real soon.